to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, among base stocks and giants, I'm Tom Holley. Mr. Matt Werber on the board. Also, Mr. Lou Michaels, S&P futures down today. We're down, 38 points. Dow futures down 245. NASDAQ futures down 160. When Chairman Powell started speaking yesterday, we were up 22 because I was putting a pretty good sized position in while the dude was talking. So we fell. We finished like down 8, and now we're down 38. So that's 46 and 22. It's a solid 68 points since he started talking, Lou. What do you think about that?
I continue to be amazed at how the market reacts to the pronouncements of the Fed. The whole discernment of, you know, what the Fed's going to do reminds me a little bit of what used to be called Kremlinology, by watching, you know, the people who were lined up on the Kremlin wall during the May Day parade. Or maybe a little less respectfully, it reminds me of the Oracle at Delphi, you know, where they would cut up a chicken and try to discern from the Oracle's pronouncements what the future was going to be. So I'm always surprised at the exploration of nuance, or the search for nuance and hidden meaning in the statements of these folks.
Manny, what do you think? I think Lou would make one hell of an oracle.
I agree.
Bring him the entrails of the whatever, the goat, and have him look in there and check out the liver and stuff and say, yeah, it's good times. Good
He's
times.
Already kind of the oracle of stocks and jocks.
Yeah, pretty much.
maybe in the sense that my comments are mystical and undecipherable.
Hey, how the hell does this snowflake is up $160 after they come up yesterday? I don't. This is crazy world, Lou. I can't
look to put market value on once, you know, new companies like that. Except that, you know, there've been not. I think people in investments are obviously driven. In these kind of IPO situations, are obviously driven by a lot of emotion and hope, and people are looking for something hopeful, and I think that reflects in some of the enthusiasm that you see for these kinds of things. I mean, I saw that during the dot-com bubble when I was working in Washington, and everybody and their dog was jumping on you know, every single technology you could possibly market. And what was the term? Irrational exuberance.
Oh yeah,
was ruling the day. So speaking of irrational exuberance, or maybe just exuberance, there seems to be an awareness on the part of CDC, and maybe I hope some other folks, that we have effectively ended, or we have effectively gotten through the pandemic portion of COVID, and are now just kind of on the very back end in terms of, you know, illness and fatality and hospitalization rates, and you're starting to see some awareness of this coming out of CDC. I hope some governments. It continues out here in the West. It continues to fascinate me that we are still, taking these fairly rigorous precautions, forced distancing and mask wearing and things like that, when I think we are well past the stage where the data shows that this stuff is not really effective in terms of preventing the hospitalizations and the mortality rates that we were concerned about 6 months ago.
Lou, we had and, Several high-profile people in the last 2 days come on and say that if we, I'm talking about, you know, high-profile, like, people, you know, I don't think they've read as much on the subject as you and I have, but they will say that if we instituted mask wearing and social distancing as a law in countrywide, we would eradicate the thing in 3 weeks. Was that Arne Duncan or some buffoon like that? Bill Gates came out and said the same thing yesterday.
Good Lord. One of the things is there's a really good video. It's about 30 minutes long, and Maddie may be able to find it, done by this guy from Europe who analyzes the European numbers and then starts talking about the U.S. And it's a fascinating read or a fascinating watch. If you have the time, he goes through a whole bunch of different graphs showing the rates of infection and hospitalization and death. A couple of points from this, and I'll try to not recreate this thing. The first is the effect of the flu season on coronavirus deaths and mortality rates. So this is the first time I've heard this. There was a relatively mild flu season, 2019 to 2020.
Kind of rough here, and for some reason was kind of gone almost by Christmas.
Well,
or January.
If you look at the mortality numbers, you will see that it was, especially in a number of countries in Europe, maybe a little less so in the United States, but still in various states it was definitely weaker. So the initial thing is COVID, because you have a lower, a less intense flu season, that means it doesn't kill as many people, which means that you have a lot of, and this was exactly the term this guy used, a lot of dry tinder sitting around in the population when COVID comes in. So COVID comes in and it's more severe than the flu. It comes into populations that are already susceptible to a pandemic or an increased mortality rate because not enough of them got killed off by the flu, you know, 3 months earlier. So COVID comes into this dry tinder situation and ravages those populations right out of the gate. So you see an increased spike and really a spike in mortality rates that is not accurate because there were a bunch of people walking around or in rest homes or in hospitals or in long-term care facilities who should have been dead. And I'm going to just speak very frankly, should have been dead because of the flu. Who didn't get it or didn't get killed because of the flu, who now find COVID in their midst and it kills them.
There's people, a couple of them on this show that are basically are, I hope they don't really, but they're talking about, you know, wearing masks like for the rest of their lives, that it's a good idea. And I've talked to some people that claim if it's 5 years from now and COVID is long gone and somebody coughs behind them in the Home Depot, they're going to turn around and tell the guy you should be wearing a mask.
That's one thing that comes out of these studies. The second thing that comes out of these studies is when you look at the graphs, and again, he's not focusing on new cases, he's focusing on hospitalizations and mortality rates because that's really what matters with this thing. The new cases don't, at this stage anyway, don't relate to or are not driving the swamping of the healthcare operator or healthcare facilities. The second thing he notes is if you look at the graphs, the mortality rates, COVID looks exactly like almost every other, you know, significant viral infection like flu or a coronavirus coming in. The graphs look almost exactly the same. And what's really interesting is you can look on the graphs at in terms of mortality over time. You can look at the graphs and you can see exactly when social distancing and mask wearing were introduced, and you can look down the road and see that they had virtually no effect on the two key measurements. Now, the disease may definitely spread, but in terms of mortality and in terms of hospitalizations, it is not affected. These curves are not affected by lockdowns or mask wearing. They might be affected by social distancing, and there may be some effect to that. But those two elements, when that stuff gets introduced, simply not effective.
Lou, why do you... It was a very serious question for my buddy Lou. Personal question. When you look at the world around you, why do you think for a nanosecond that anybody is going to believe anything that makes any sense in the middle of the crap on both sides of what they're getting?
Oh, well, let me wrap it up. Let me wrap up the third part of this. So the third part of this, and this is something that we've talked about, and something that Scott Atlas, the president's health advisor, has been talking about. Well, the excess morbidity, the excess deaths that we're starting to look at now are from the lockdown, or that could be attributed to the lockdown, are now pretty far in excess of the deaths that we could attribute to COVID. And that number is increasing every day.
That's my biggest fear, Lou. Not only that, or what we've done to the economy and the stress and stuff that's happening there.
We talked about that earlier, but that is definitely the case. So now the cure now is worse than the disease and is killing more people.
But Lou, as your buddy Adolf Hitler once said, if you have the big lie going, even after it's debunked years later, have 40% of the people still believe it.
Absolutely. So now we start to see that this awareness was already in place in a variety of different venues, and yet the government was not responding except to try to institute more control.
So now you have the government
emails that have come out of Nashville, Tennessee, of all places, and I don't have any reason to believe that this is out of the ordinary, where you have discussions between the mayor and the public health entity for the county, I think, which Nashville is located, and they're in June now. They are talking about the fact that they've opened up, they've got bars operating, but they're not getting any cases coming out of the bars. The positives and the new case developments, as far as they can tell, are coming from somewhere else. So the first thing the mayor does, Chief, what do you think the reaction of the mayor was?
You're going to close the bars.
The first thing the mayor said was, wait a minute, we don't want this data getting out. This isn't going to be public, is it? Because we want to keep the bars closed.
There's been no question, Lou, from the get-go. It's basically gone from hospitals early on to nursing homes to homes, to regular homes. We'll never know how many Hispanics, African-American people, and even I'll say blue-collar white people have had it, because they had it, they kept their mouth shut, and they kept going to work, probably. There's this whole underclass that the upper crust people, I hate to say this, people on CNBC living at home with their stupid Skype where their face looks all white, they can't even drive into New York, for God's sake, when they're getting paid that kind of money. So they're at home, and they get a whole different view of the world, Lou, than I do, because I worked every day, and I talk to people that work every day. I mean, I played softball Sunday with some people, and Lou, the policemen, they never got a day off for COVID. The firemen, no. I see these guys next door. Maddie, how many? I don't know. Engine company number one does all the expressway work. Those guys, I'm going to say, Lou, unlike a regular firehouse, I think those guys have told me they've had as many as 17 trips in a 24-hour period. And there's six people. They have a couple ladies work down there. They pile in the back of this thing. I don't care if you're wearing a mask. If you're sitting on somebody's lap, basically, piling in the back of the truck, even if it would help you anywhere else, it's not helping you there. So those people either all had it or are immune to it. I mean, the garbage men, they're still riding a truck with somebody 8 hours a day. I mean, does anybody, the total lack of knowledge of the rest of the world, of our... Not just our politicians, but the upper crust media, whether be it right or left, to me is astounding. Just astounding.
I think that's true. And you know, a couple of other interesting points here. So we got to keep the bars shut down. That's what the mayor of Nashville is saying. I look at this and go, okay, here's what's going down right now. Here's what's going down with this. We can't admit that we screwed up and that we didn't know what was going on in the early part of the virus. So what we're going to do is we're going to continue this stuff because, A, it tells people that your government is working hard. may be doing stupid stuff, right, which is what is happening now. But we're, I mean, it's like the worst. It's like the worst elements of the Beetle Bailey cartoons are coming to roost in these bureaucracies. I remember one of my favorite cartoons. In fact, it was posted in one of my ready rooms when I was a flyer for the Air Force, and it shows the Sergeant Beetle standing, you know, the enlisted guy standing by himself in a frame, and then the next frame the Sarge walks by, and Beetle's jumping up and down in one place, and the next frame the Sarge goes, "Way to go, Beetle," and walks on past. The next frame is Beetle standing there by himself again, saying, "The Army doesn't care what you do as long as you do it with vigor." This is like the worst.
Well, Lou,
it's
becoming, if you observe, I mean, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't have, you know, not stayed home and come to work and all that stuff, but the views you get are amazing when you're out and listening to people, because the class consciousness, the racial overtones in this city with this mayor are scary. I mean, one of my good buddies, he's on the board of Mount Carmel now. And Mount Carmel is down, you know, south side in the lakefront. So he goes there on a Saturday morning for a board meeting. He's driving back through Jackson Park. Now, the museum's closed down or, you know, whatever, half capacity or God knows what. So all the parking lots from the museums, which are, you know, pretty nice. They're right in the park. It's a beautiful day. So, of course, they're jammed with people cooking out and everything. They're all African-American. And he goes, "There is not a mask in sight. There is no social distancing." He goes, "Everybody was having a great time. It smelled great. I almost felt like stopping." You know, I got no problem with that, Lou. Yet, the next day, they've got these, the four gay guys up on Montrose Beach standing too close to each other. And they're getting arrested. And our girl, AV, Angelica, goes on a walk on the beach, and she sits down to watch the sunrise, and some cop rouses her, 'cause she's got to keep moving. You know, and yet, meanwhile, Lori's people, for lack of a better term, can do whatever they damn well please, and there's no way the police are busting that up. I mean, we've got to get our...
getting haircuts and everything else.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying... The unevenness of this is just... But here's my concern, Lou, and I listened to... What's his name? I'm going to lead into our Fed guy. You know, I don't know. The dude, he must know more than me. He's got that job, for God's sake. He's talking about these rates being here till 2023. Lou, in 69 or 71 or whatever? I know when we had, and I was in the remodeling business in 1977, they had a 5% rate rise in like 3 months because the Fed bleeped up and denied the inflation coming. And now he's saying, even if we have inflation, we're keeping rates at zero. Lou, that is so damn ignorant. I can't believe a guy that we pay to be the chief economist of this country would make a statement like that. So even if this inflation jabs to 15, we're keeping this at zero. No, you're not. No, you're not. You're going to start ramping these rates up as fast as you can ramp them up. They're going to go up by two points a month because they did before. I mean, I don't. Do these guys, did they stop reading history a month ago, or do they wipe it out of their head, or what?
I don't pretend to know what the Fed looks at in terms of its pronouncements. I'm trying to take a shorter term look at the bureaucratic response to COVID and the fact that the guy who was saying, we need to get people out, we need to get people, you know, back to work, was saying that in May, and by the way, most of this stuff had crested, and in most states, the pandemic surge was over by the middle of May. We knew by the middle of May we weren't going to be swamping our hospitals, and we weren't going to run out of ventilators, and we weren't going to need all this excess capacity that we built in and ginned up in like no time. We knew, you know, the president was saying let's get past this now. And at that, around that time, because you saw the craziness in the press, the media stopped talking about COVID deaths and started talking about new cases, because it was clear that in fact the surge of the pandemic had passed, but we still need to bash the president over something, so let's bash him over new cases. And that's what you see now. That's the basis for continuing this lockdown or continuing these restrictive measures. And it's not based in science. We have a party that says, look, I believe in science, but the clear answer is no, you only believe in science.
Well, everybody always believes in, everybody always believes in their personal brand of science. This isn't new.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm fascinated by what I'm seeing now coming out with these numerical analyses. And again, initially, you know, in the first 30 days, 45 days of this thing, since nobody really understood exactly what we had, I'm not getting too excited about missteps. I'm excited about incompetence, and CDC needs to take a bow in that because they screwed up the testing, and you know, FDA made it almost impossible for us to utilize the lab strength that we have in this country. But other than things like that, I'm not going to get too excited about it. I do get excited about the stupidity of the governors in New York and New Jersey and Michigan and a couple of other places.
Illinois.
Where they forced people back into nursing homes because that was something that they should have picked up on.
Well, they never picked up on.
I'm not going to get too excited about.
Lou, they never picked up on the fact that the hospitals were the germ central.
Yeah.
And that the people in the nursing homes and.
Now I am getting excited about bureaucratic incompetence because we know now, we've got the data now, and we have had for a couple of months, and to continue these steps now is just, I don't understand why we're doing it. For example, in Colorado, the governor just extended the mask mandate for everywhere indoors in public places unless you're eating. I don't understand that. I mean, there's no basis for it.
Lou, you can't. They bled people for 8 centuries, and if it didn't work out, they didn't bleed you enough. I mean, this is not new in human events.
I don't think that was necessarily a mandate of government. Number one, and number two, I don't know what the data sets were that were available for that, but I know what the data sets are now and that are available to
there's no way that you're going to have.
It's crazy. The governor of New Mexico said a couple of weeks ago, you know, we really need to just do this full time, this social distancing and mask wearing. And I'm thinking, what on earth is wrong with you? What would
Lou? He's got easy
a stupid
easy
40% like
of the population right with him. You don't find a governor with the kind of stones when Bill Gates and Arne Dunk and a couple other, what is it? Goldman Sachs came out and said they should be a nationwide mask mandate, and because when we'd cut this down, we'd get rid of it in 2 months or something stupid a few weeks ago. There's no way that you have governors that are going to come out and say, those guys are all idiots. We're backing off on this mask mandate, on this state. That they don't have those kinds of stones. You're not going to do that.
Yeah, but again, so the question is why not? Why does a governor not get up and say, look, here's the graph, here's the data, here's what the epidemiologists say about this stuff. Here's what we saw in Florida and in Texas, where they have not enforced this kind of stuff, and a few other places. So here's what we're going to do. Here's what the data says, and here's what, I'm making the call.
Well, we're not talking about
this economy started. Nobody's willing to do that. Why not?
Lou, we're not talking about these people being World War II veterans, like your dad, my dad, that were used to doing stuff that made, that was important, and came back with that knowledge of things. You looked at what you're doing, and you learned from your mistakes. And those kinds of these guys, they're not any, and by any stretch, are they capable of that job?
So let me ask you: Do you think after the election, this all falls away?
I think that they're going to. I honestly believe, and this is even more ignorant. I think that as soon as a couple of these vaccines pop out, they're going to have some kind of a demand that people go get it. And somehow or another, there's going to somehow combine a forced vaccine thing with, if you have a vaccine, you can now act normally, but if you didn't, you can't, or something screwed up like that is going to happen. I believe.
So you want to talk about intrusiveness.
Yeah.
How do you find How do you determine that? In other words, we're going to say we're not going to mandate the vaccine because legally we can't. But if you don't have it...
Whoa. You see, here's my problem with you, Lou, is as brilliant as you are, you got to get out more. Maddie, am I right? You got to get out more. If you listen to CNBC the other day, the guy from Britain on there, somebody says you can't mandate everybody getting the vaccine. He goes, "What do you mean? You pass a law and you have a fine and you do it." You
know, Brits certainly can't. They don't have a constitution.
Well, but I'm saying is, if you walk around everywhere you see people, we got people on this show. I can have you to know, and I think you know who they are. If you were to say to them that you should, how many times have you heard in the last 4 months? You can't count on people to have common sense. Because my thought always has been, you give people the information properly, and people will act, most of the time, appropriately. Oh, you can't count on people to have common sense. It's like the famous, you know, gun lobby. Everybody, if I have an IQ of 34, everybody who has an IQ 33 or lower shouldn't be allowed to have a gun, right? This is not new, Lou. You know people better than that. There's people now, you know, this is totally out of control. And
I agree. Think about what that means. If you come in and say, okay, we're going to make it a requirement that if you want to do certain activities like go to a restaurant or go to a concert, you've got to either be vaccinated or you've got to have some other statement to the effect that you are immune from the disease. So now the government is going to say, we're not going to make you get the shot, but you're not going to be able to do stuff if
right.
you don't get it.
Don't, I wouldn't put that past me in a second, Luke. And I tell you, right now, my
think
estimates
about how
are...
how intrusive that's going to be, Chief.
All right, but my estimate...
It's going to be required for anybody and their dog...
By the way, I didn't say I was for this.
...and access to it.
I didn't say I was for this, by the way. What I'm saying is, right now, Luke, there's got to be, even by Fauci and the buffoons over there, that iterations. If you look at 10 times as many people have had it, like everybody seems to admit now, we're talking, what, 40 million people have had it? Name me one accommodation that anybody has given anybody who's already had it and has the antibodies. Not one.
No.
Absolutely. SP Futures down 38, and then when we come back, somebody will say, yeah, but nobody knows if will you get it or not. When all the people who had it before start getting it again, we'll all know, Lou. It'll be right. If it's 2 years, if it's 22 months, we'll all know, right? The only way we'll know is when we know. SP Futures up 30, I'm sorry, down 37. NASDAQ Futures down 184. Not a good morning here. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Lou Michaels with us as well. S&P futures down 38. NASDAQ futures down 184. Dow futures down 226. So not good this morning. Really started, well, I'm not saying anything particular Powell said, but as he was talking yesterday, I did it very small, but as I was telling people here in the office, hey, buy the announcement, sell the news conference. It's happened so many times with this guy, but now, did I do it? Maybe a little bit. I legged into a spread, the right way at least, but, anyway, we also have, this thing is continuing ongoing with this, as much as some people, you know, are for the dude, I think it's absolutely unconscionable that Trump is in the middle of this Oracle TikTok deal, Lou. I mean, this is not their job. I don't know what's going on there. But anyway, around the rest of the world, might as well get this done. It can't be good news everywhere else. DAX down 90.7%, not as bad as here. FTSE down 33.6%. CAC around down 38.7%. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 156.7%. Shanghai down 13.4. Hang Seng's the big one, down 384, 1.6%. As we have a big envoy over there today, we'll have to ask Lou comment on this. So highest ranking U.S. policy person in like a lot of years over in Taiwan, and of course, people from China are fit to be tied about this. Yesterday, just as a way of review, the Dow was up 36, S&P was down 15 after being up like 23 or 4, and NASDAQ was down 139. That was a full 1.25%. Bonds back down to 0.66. Cannot go anywhere here. Bund minus 0.49. And then Japan hanging absolutely by a thread above zero. Get a load of this. 0.008. So that's not much interest. Hope you're not counting on that to buy a new roof. Oil up 13 cents, back up over 40, 40.29. Brent up 18 cents, 42.40. Natural gas down a penny at 2.24. RBOB up to 119. That's back up from like 110 in the last week. Last but not least, gold down 18 bucks to 1952. Seems to be in a pretty narrow range here now from like 1930 to 1970. Silver down 46 cents to 27 bucks. Copper at 304. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports, man?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Looks like we're off to a good start here on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. So that's good news. If you're coming in on the Ryan I-57 of the Bishop Ford, it is very quiet. Same for the Stevenson. Eisenhower looking good. Kennedy inbound. You'll run into a little bit of traffic on the inbound side. The outbound side, we had a crash on the outbound side between Kimball and Addison. And that has the outbound side backed up a little bit on the Kennedy as crews work to get that cleared up. So that's our only concern right now on any of the area expressways. Off the expressways, it looks like there's a crash at Archer Avenue and Harlem that's causing delays. But everything looking good out there. Weather today, clouds early, then we'll see some sunshine. Much cooler than yesterday, but still pleasant. A high of 66. Right now it's cloudy and 64 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 108. Right now it's clear and 79. In sports, the Cubs are hot. They've won 4 in a row and 7 out of 10. They beat the Indians last night in 10 innings, 3-2. White Sox lost to the Twins, 5-1. Diamondbacks beat the Angels, 9-6. So we're heading down the home stretch here in the Major League Baseball standings. White Sox are still in first place in the AL Central. and best record in all of the American League at 32-17. They're two games up on the Twins and six up on the Indians, who are fading fast. They've lost eight in a row. Cubs are in first place in the NL Central at 30-20. That's the third best record in the National League as it stands right now. They're 5.5 up on Cincinnati and 5.5 up on the St. Louis Cardinals, 6.5 up on Milwaukee. And lastly, the Diamondbacks have won two in a row, but they're out of it. No chance of making the playoffs at 19-31, last place in the NL West. Thursday night football tonight, it'll be the Bengals versus the Cleveland Browns in a battle of Ohio. That's a 7:20 kickoff Central Time. Big news in college sports yesterday. We mentioned this on the show yesterday, that rumors were out there, and then it was officially announced that Big Ten football will return the weekend of October 24th. They will play an 8-game season in 8 weeks, no byes, and then the Big Ten championship will be played by the top two teams after 8 weeks on December 19th, and that meets the deadline of December 20th to announce for the college football playoff. So Big Ten football to kick off on October 24th, or that weekend. College basketball also made an announcement yesterday, and that's that the college basketball season will tip off November 25th. So that's across the board. The NCAA voted, and college basketball will start November 25th. No additional details yet, but a lot of rumors that they're going to have some bubble sites for college basketball. We will see how that works. And lastly, in a big weekend in sports, the U.S. Open tees off later this morning, Chief. In fact, I think they just got underway a few minutes ago. So we'll keep you posted on that in our next report, Chief.
So let's see. Money trumps COVID.
Money trumps everything.
Yeah, seems like it, doesn't it?
Money trumps. Well, but okay. So this goes to our discussion, and this will wrap us into sports now because I wanted to talk about this. The Air Force, my alma mater, plays in the Mountain West Conference, and they shut down early, like in August. They were right there with the Big Ten. You know, we're not going to play. We can't play. Whatever. And you know, I think the SEC and the ACC pushing forward has just kind of opened up everybody's eyes to say, you know what, you can do this, and we can move on it. So Big Ten's coming in now.
Oh, Lou, it's not opening up people's eyes. They made money yesterday, and we didn't. What's wrong?
Yeah, so now the Mountain West. I saw a Twitter note out from yesterday from the Mountain West that said, you know what, maybe we were a little hasty. It's really interesting because Air Force, of course, Mountain West member, Mountain West directed that none of its teams were to play. Okay. So Air Force then goes and says, wait a minute, Navy's playing and Army is playing. You know, and we want to play. We want to at least play Army and Navy. So the Mountain West said, okay, you guys can play those two games. So Air Force is going to play a two-game football season, as of right now, against Army and Navy. And Navy is screaming about the fact that this is really unfair. They only have to prepare for two games. You know, we've got to prepare for, you know, whatever it is, eight or nine. And it really is an interesting.
Well, if you recall, we talked about it.
Pentagon,
Nebraska.
Because Navy wants the Pentagon to come in and tell the Air Force, no, you can't play against Army or Navy. We just want an Army Navy game. That's all we're going to go for this year.
Well, if you recall, we reported it on the, since Maddie's from like Iowa, which is close to Nebraska. He was all over this one. Nebraska, I think, I don't know if they petitioned, but they basically told the Big Ten, if you guys aren't playing, we want to play with the Big 12? Big Ten? Who's those other guys? Texas, those guys, Manny.
Big 12.
Big 12. Didn't they
Big
say
12,
they? Yeah. And then the Big Ten, they absolutely got their undies in a knot, saying, oh, you guys can't do that. That's bullshit. You can't. No way we're letting you do that, or we're kicking you out of the Big Ten. So it was not just Air Force that felt that way. Nebraska did too.
I know, but it's pretty interesting. I mean, you're now seeing a real fight with one of the service academies because Air Force's conference has prohibited them from playing except for these two games. Navy and Army, whose conferences have not done that, are able to play football, and you know, but Air Force only has to prepare for two games, and they're start Navy's screaming about it.
When do you think the Pac-10 is going to say their plan?
Well, they just I heard it announced yesterday. I saw it on The Athletic that UCLA and USC have been given approval to practice.
Well, I looked last night, and there was nothing in current news that said they'd set a date or having a meeting or anything.
I don't know about that, but they announced that the schools announced that whatever requirements, I think this was state law, that whatever they needed from the state to get approval to practice together, they've gotten it. Which, again, this is so stupid. These are not vulnerable populations. These are, you know, the healthiest people in the world.
Oh, Luders, and see, it's very rare that I get to counsel you, but I'm counseling you. Don't you understand that the people from Penn State came out with that thing and said athletes have this heart issue, and then they recanted it? But it doesn't matter. It's out there. If you went and had four cups of coffee in coffee shops in San Francisco today, everybody will be quoting that article. And then it was someplace, somewhere, some kid is at a football practice, and he's going to croak, and they're going to test, and he's going to be positive COVID, and it'll be all over every tweet on the world, and look what you're doing to these kids, you're killing them. I mean, it's just like the guy, the article I read about the Jerry Ford virus. He said someplace, somewhere, somebody's going to take your vaccine, and some guy the next morning is going to wake up and have a heart attack, and you're going to find that everything in his body was clogged, but it doesn't matter. It's going to be your vaccine that was a fault. I mean, that's the world we're in. And then,
I know, but let's. I mean, let me explore this topic. So I follow Clay Travis on Outkick the Coverage, and he's been pushing. He's one of the only sports writers that's been pushing for reopening and getting sports back and getting college athletics back again. So he has been blasting, and I didn't notice this until I read it in one of his columns. There's a whole body of sports writers that are just adamant that college football needs to be shut down.
Oh, sure. Run it out.
And I didn't realize, I mean, and guess what? They're with the New York Times, they're with the Washington Post, they're with you know, mainstream newspapers, but they're sports columnists.
Well, but they're also
saying no, you can't open it up. It's a disaster. Christine Brennan, for God's sake, at the Post, I think, was blasting the decision of the Big Ten. And I'm going, what's the basis? Where's your science behind saying that you need to keep this
right, stop,
especially for this population?
Okay. Stop. Wait, what do I have to do this to Lou? Maybe we have to put this show like in an archive or something. Lou, it has nothing to do. You were the guy years ago that accused Mr. Weber of being a moral relativist. If anybody,
I believe I remember that.
If anybody should realize that right now this is all about relativism, it has nothing to do with things making any sense. If you're going to have people not going back to work and not riding the subway, okay, your entire economy is in shambles, which it is, and it's getting worse by the day, the last thing you need is to take a chance from their point of view with a bunch of people that are unpaid. Together, no masks, no social distancing. The object is to bang into the other guy as hard as you can. To have that going on when those kids aren't even getting paid, to take the chance with them, when you're not willing to take a chance with anybody else, is insanity, if you look at it from that perspective.
Well, but I think I look at it from a different perspective.
Right, I understand that. But I'm saying, just understand where these other people are coming from.
Yeah, the science,
they're not
the science
wrong,
says that it's perfectly safe.
No, they're not wrong.
I think... This is driven by, and you see the political motivations of these sports writers, which is, A, I think a lot of them never really like football anyway, and B, this is something that we can if we start seeing a return to normalcy before that November election, it's going to benefit the president, and we don't want to benefit the president.
I think
that drives a lot of
all them. I'm saying, Lou, and I think Maddie agrees with me, so it's two against one here. I rarely get that.
Oh, good, because we all know that majority voting means that the scientific explanation is correct.
Lou, this is a democracy. You got four wolves and a hen voting what's for dinner. That's just the way it goes.
I understand. I understand that part of it. Speaking of which, did you see the Scientific American pronouncement earlier about the scientific method and trying to strike down or say, and this is why I discount everything I read now unless I see it backed up somewhere. But Scientific American is taking the position now that true science and true scientific discovery and meaning is only proper when it's achieved as a result of a consensus of quote scientific opinion, and that the idea that you have to have something called falsibility, which is the ability of experiments to validate whether your theory is correct or
right,
not.
Right, so the guy who said the world was round, he had to wait till everybody agreed with him before it was really round?
Yes, that's exactly what it
was. Well, that makes no sense.
It absolutely rejects like 1,000 years of Renaissance and Reformation and the scientific revolution that occurred in Western science, where the idea that we could experiment and determine by experiment this works, this doesn't, and if we can replicate that result, then we have something that's valid. It rejects all of that. It is the craziest thing I've seen, and again, I'm looking at it going, what would be the reason for this? Well, the reason is climate science fails this kind of test, and so do a number of other very popular progressive causes fail this kind of test. And so they want to eliminate the ability of people to scientifically challenge climate studies and instead go, look, most of the scientists agree with this, therefore it's got to be right. And I'm going, good heavens, that we've got flat Earth and the sun revolving around the Earth, all those discoveries that were and part of the Copernican revolution all goes by the wayside because consensus at that time would have been no, the sun does revolve around the Earth, not the other way around. It's crazy.
Well, everything has a pushback, Lou, as you know. The last thing I want is the scientists from the plastic industry telling me how safe it is to have plastic pouring into the ocean at 90 bazillion tons a day. That's not their call. I mean, it's not Jay Pritzker's call to close nursing homes when his family owns a bazillion nursing homes. I mean, but I want to run one by you. Wouldn't you say that Lou is much closer to the people when he used to?
By the way, let me throw one other thing out. I just saw an announcement this morning that the British Premier League has disassociated itself from Black Lives Matter, which is really interesting.
I don't know how you disassociate, but anyway, my.
They were affiliating themselves with it and putting the signs up and doing all the other crazy stuff that we're seeing here. They've now said we're stopping that.
Well, Louis, I never thought that my 4 years of Latin, I always used to think that no matter what course I took, at some point, as useless as the course seemed to be, somewhere in my life, I'm glad I took it because I remember something from it and it was appropriate. You look at Roman history, like I never looked at before because I've been reading more of it. What they did to their dollar, essentially, their denarius, whatever the hell damn thing was, is exactly what we're doing with ours. Okay, to their horrible end on that, by the way. The whole idea, we have people running around demonstrating. We have all kinds of crap going on in this country. You don't think there's a part of the account of people that say, we got to get these people back watching football games and basketball games. I mean, it was the horrendous emperor that took over Rome, and nobody liked the guy, but he had, I guess, the gladiator fights were only on weekends, and he had him, 20 days in a row to win over the people? I mean, don't think that there's a lot of what's going down. I'm going to say I'm glad to see football's back, but I will tell you this. I mean, Maddie and I both believe that on a relative scale, in terms of people going to work, in terms of firms going under, which I want to talk about in a second, I don't really care, Lou, if Notre Dame plays.
Yeah, if, I understand.
If somebody doesn't have their job. I mean, come on, we're not even on the same planet. And yet, but then again, look at the money these people. You listen to the pre-Bear game stuff on Sunday. not the game itself. They had some sponsors. If they didn't have FanDuel and who's the other guys, Manny, that are
DraftKings.
DraftKings. If they didn't have them, they look like CNBC 5 years ago if they didn't have Viagra and what was the other one? I mean, it's the entire commercial role. I mean, this is all about, this is our new lifestyle. We're just sitting at home, we're watching this stuff, we're drinking beer, and we're betting on stuff. Well, that's interesting. I mean, I don't know if that's the world I want to see.
The term you're looking for is bread and circuses.
Yes, yes.
And I get that. I think the return of college sports, the return of pro sports is not as important as the fact that 60% of the businesses that are going under during COVID are not coming back.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. You know, I'm going to say, man, don't you think that when Lou used to walked here in the office, walked by people, say hello, see how many people were out of work, see how many bums around, how he was a much more rounded guy than living in the mountains on a gold mine, you know?
It's kind of no, thing. The lockdown has made me pretty rounded in a physical sense, if you know what I mean.
I don't believe that. You're always in good shape. Anyway, here's my fear, Lou, and talk me out of this. You get to talk me out of this for a while. From my economic training tells me that when this all started and people shut down, all right, let's just say the first 15, 30 days were a good idea, all right? And the government, to their credit, even though they printed the money, to their credit, they came up with a lot of programs, and for the first time I can ever remember, they actually jammed some of it down to every man and jammed some of it down to small businesses. I mean, I can't ever really remember that ever. And so let's say they did a good job at that. But they had a, when do we start this, St. Patrick's Day? All right, so half of March, April, June. So April, May, June. So they essentially had 105 days, right, was their estimate on when we were going to be somewhat back to normal. Because all this stuff ended at the end of June, right? The PPP stuff, you paid your people in June, then the government was going to forgive it, blah, blah, blah. Okay, well, now June is a long time ago. Now we're talking September. And we have these intermittent shutdowns. You can open up at 25%. Oh, no, you can't. You got to still close for 2 weeks. All right, make it 30%. Ah, make it cut it back. All this kind of crap. Lou, everything and every fiber of my being says to me that our economy is in much greater danger now than it was in March. And it seems to be, you listen to TV, stock market goes up, you know, we're worried about the election. Everybody's oblivious to this, Lou. Why? I mean, where am I wrong here? I hope to God you say to me, Chief, you're wrong, and here's why, and I don't think about it again. I think the restaurants I've seen, and Maddie and I have heard stuff on the way in and talked to people, restaurants that have opened up 3 weeks ago, happy as hell to open up finally, open up for 2 weeks. Now their savings are gone. They probably extended their credit cards and whatever else. They're saying, I can't make any business. I think more places have closed in the last 3 weeks than did in March.
I think you're seeing, well, let me put it this way. I definitely see that here in Denver. We're seeing a lot of places, restaurants, gyms, Men's Warehouse, Joseph A. Banks just went Chapter 11. I was dropping a suit off at Joseph A. Banks. And so Denver's not Chicago, but it had six or seven of those stores. They're all gone.
Yep.
There's one store in Denver, and when I came in there to get to drop the suit off, I could hear the clerk talking to somebody on the phone, and she said, we're now the only place open in Denver. And he says, oh, the next closest place is Colorado Springs, which is 70 miles away. Really sort of drove home to me, we're not going to see this stuff come back.
No.
I mean, look at the number of gyms that have gone under. 24-hour Fitness is going Chapter 11, and with their nationwide operation, Gold's Gym is in trouble. All of these places, and this virus is driving something that you and I have talked about, and it's probably one of our greatest fears, and that is a consolidation in this economy in a few very powerful. Large corporate entities that are now going to be running and controlling, you know, shopping, dining, transportation, and a number of other things.
Why don't you add?
I don't know.
Once you add all the politicians in there as well.
I don't know if you read the opinion by that federal court judge in Pennsylvania, where he found that the governor's order was unconstitutional to continue the lockdown.
I did.
It's a really interesting read because he goes in and says, you know, this was only supposed to go for a month or so. We're now 6 months into it, of the governor basically deciding that a mom-and-pop store can't open up to sell something or other, which means people go to Target or Walmart or Costco for all of their stuff.
Right.
And we are illegally centralizing and driving business out of these operations, and we're not doing it according to any rational basis. It's a really interesting court opinion. Matt can link to it.
I'm going to say that judge has listened to the show. He has to have.
it's a really interesting read. It walks through probably 90% of the stuff that you and I and Kevin and some other folks have talked about over the last 2 or 3 months.
You know, the thing that bothered me, Lou, is not that people made the wrong decision going in. It's like me making a bad trade. But you got to fix it. You can't see people walking out of Target with blue jeans, driving by the blue jeans store that's closed. I mean, how do you let that go on, even if you did it the first week by mistake?
Well, again, it's part of this was the comment that I made. You and I had this discussion, and I said, you know, in the short term, and at that time I was thinking we're talking 30 to 45 days, in the short term, I can live with that,
right,
with that distinction, but not 6 months worth. And that's what this guy is writing about. It's a really good opinion, and if Matty can link to it, that'd be great.
It smacks of the governor owning stock in Target. I mean, honestly, I don't put anything past these people.
Exactly.
Lou, thank you very much. But SP Futures now down 45. Ouch. NASDAQ Futures down 222. Be right back, Mr. Dan Janinas. We'll see if he can come up with some picks here. He usually does. I can't wait. Be right back.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate this summer, could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Welcome up to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Dan Janice from Kratos Capital. S&P futures down 48, NASDAQ futures down 241. Dan, did I see you at the Fed meeting yesterday asking questions?
You may have. I'm actually I'm coming to you from Boston today. So
uh-oh.
I wasn't at the Fed meeting, but I definitely was paying careful attention.
I made the statement before the meeting. Of course, I didn't do anything about it. We legged into some new idea that we're having. Of course, we had a big winner in it yesterday. I hope the client doesn't get used to that. so it's having new clients, as you well know, Dad. It's like it's sort of like going to the track your first day. You don't want all winners. You don't want all losers. You want it sort of like it's going to be. I mean, I said to everybody, let's do what we always should do. Let's buy the statement and sell a news conference, and yeah, that would have worked yesterday, huh?
No, absolutely. Yeah, I think now if you get new cash in, and I've had a new account as well that I've been gradually putting money in. I think for the next few months, it's probably going to be okay, and it may be to your advantage to take your time in this environment because I think we have some volatility in front of us.
Well, you know what? I'll run this one by you, Dan, because like your opinion, you know, I don't know if you've read my stuff. We've done a protected index program really off and on now for, you know, 25 years, for God's sake. And we didn't do it for a while when interest rates were piling way down and market was just going up. But now we've been doing it. But we did it for a real long time. And it basically, you get, you get long and underlying, which we use like a spider or something. And we get a longer term put and we try and manage shorter term calls, sell against them, and try and pay for the put, which by and large, most of the time has worked out pretty well. I've always had the feeling, being a market maker, that the real way to do that, given the fact that since the volatility always has the out of the money puts spiking, because people are always buying, you know, Armageddon puts,
right,
that the real way to get advantage of this, especially in a low interest rate environment, would be to buy the calls, short the underlying, and short the puts. And I've never had a position or client that was big enough to do that before, and now I do. And we're trying it. And I have a feeling I'm getting 4 and 5 vol spread on the calls I'm buying versus the puts I'm selling. And I have a feeling that it's going to work out an awful lot better than Pip ever did. My problem is nobody on the retail side can really do it unless you've got portfolio margin or market maker margin or firm margin or something. But I think the plan, I'll keep you posted, but let's put it this way. We're never going to have a better first day. I think we sold the spiders at 3:42, and now they're 3:34, 2 hours later. So,
yeah.
I'm not so sure that's ever going to happen again. But you know, hey, you take the bad ones, you got to take a good one once in a while too, right?
Yeah, and we actually had a good day yesterday as well. The small cap and value names outperformed. We had a bond mature. An energy bond we were getting a nice fat yield, but we have some cash in now. And now, you know, just like you with having the new cash in, I think this is a period to just take your time with putting that money to work, and looking for the right opportunities and kind of watching the market for dips. I do think this volatility is going to continue, and I think that there may be even more coming after the election, so at least for a short period of time before we see this, you sort of longer term sector, you know, this longer term improvement, which is going to come with the vaccine.
I would agree. yesterday, when we're, since this is your business really more than mine, the fixed income stuff, whenever I heard the chairman yesterday say we're going to keep rates here till 2023. And, you know, Dan, there were guys, if you would have told people in 1971 that they were going to keep rates at a certain number, they would have said the same thing. And yet, if inflation breaks out, which I think it is, nobody's going to lend people long-term money. And I remember times when the Fed had to raise, I just had a history of it. I had it here somewhere, and of course I lost it, but I'll find it again. I think there was a period of time where in a couple of those years where in 2 and 3 month times they raised the interest rates up like 4%, 5%. And we got this guy promising you zero for 3 years. I mean, what even possesses him to do that when you know long-term rates are out of your hands as a Fed? It has to do with, I mean,
it's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's natural course.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just part of the cycle. I absolutely agree. We were looking at, you know, for paper earlier in the week and last week, and I can say that, you know, at least sort of in the high yield bond space and the corporate bond space, we're seeing yields at the lowest levels and now, and really hard to think about buying paper like Ford or Occidental Petroleum at 2.5%. So it's, you know, again, as I've been mentioning in recent weeks, that it's time to look for other sectors or other areas of opportunity. Last time we spoke about preferred as a way of getting some yield, and the preferred stocks have done very well the last few weeks. They've really hung in there. You haven't seen the volatility that we've seen in the equity market, certainly not in the tech names. But the other area that is coming back, and I mentioned this a few weeks ago, is the REITs as a way of getting yield. And one REIT in particular that we had talked about was Global Self Storage. Its ticker symbol is SELF, S-E-L-F. And we met with management again. We've actually been buying this stock, which has had a nice run here. It's not a high flyer. This is a REIT that pays 6.5%. We were buying it in the high threes. It's now around 4.10, 4.11. This is a company that's managed by an investment guy, a Wall Street guy who knows how to run portfolios, who understands diversification, who has done a good job of keeping costs down, restructuring a company. He's been very good and very careful about acquisitions. And a lot of their business and public storage is in the second tier cities. So it's, you know, there's some in Illinois and Indiana, Ohio, a little bit in the Northeast, some in Oklahoma. And so he's looking at specific properties that don't have a lot of competition. And he's looking at things like climate control. He's looking at, you know, ways that they can have an advantage. Occupancy or capacity, I should say, is low 90s, 91%. So you're getting this steady flow, this steady income. And so if you're looking for that kind of consistent yield, you know, for 6.5%, it's pretty decent. Now, going bigger picture, what's happening in the sector as a whole is that there's been more attention being focused to the real estate sector. Again, I should say the commercial real estate sector. And VNQ, if you follow that, Vanguard's REIT, and we do own, have owned some of that, now trading at close to its highest levels. And people are asking, well, what's happening with shopping centers shutting down? And after some thought, I mean, it's pretty clear that there is other uses for these spaces besides retail. Other uses for, in fact, the self-storage people are looking at strip malls and old shopping centers. I know that there are, you know, I have friends and relatives who are in the, who are artists. A lot of the, some of these malls are turning into, they're opening art studios. So there's other, people are going to start being creative with the use of these properties. If you remember years ago, and being here in Boston, it's a reminder that a lot of, you know, industrial buildings were converted to office space. Industrial buildings were converted to condos. Churches and schools were converted to condos. So that, I think there's going to be a transition to a new use for the space that's already there. And I think this trend is going to continue, and I think it's going to help keep the real estate market afloat, the commercial real estate market afloat during this period of uncertainty that we're in. So I think there's opportunity here, and if you're looking for a nice lease, you know, lease payments that are going to give you a nice steady cash flow that's going to be a whole lot more than you can get from buying Ford or Occidental Petroleum paper, you know, real estate investment trusts are not a bad place to go.
Dan, how do you, I might as well cast aspersions here, but when Cramer used to go crazy over his, I'm going to say the worst CEO ever, the guy from Kmart and Sears, but Cramer loved the guy, right? So, but he would always do is he would spout about his, the real estate holdings now, it's a real estate. How the hell do you, or me, how do you ever get a run of the run, that's the term he's used at Pullman, of here's all the Sears and Kmart properties and take a sample and say, okay, here's one that they own. They paid X for it in 1912 and look what it's worth now. It's obviously a winner. Or this other one, it's a lease. The lease isn't even very good. By the way, you got 10 more years left on the lease and you want to close the store, so you're a skunk there. I mean, how do you even have any kind of an analytical feel? I don't think they give you that information that level. I mean, the guys that you go talk to are going to give it to you. But I mean, these bigger firms, how do you ever know? Plus, when you talk about the self-storage thing, I actually know some people in that business, and it's been a really good business from day one, but I'm going to say that's my economic schooling is a little faded here. Those are almost like, what was the potatoes when the economy got bad, the demand for potatoes went up because nobody could afford steak. I mean, that's like almost like a regressive industry, right? I mean, if the economy gets worse, I'm going to say self-storage probably gets better.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a steady eddy in terms of a play. In terms of choosing properties, just as it is with choosing individual stocks, I mean, people do their homework. So, for example, the people who run SELF, Global Self Storage, they spend a lot of time analyzing these properties, just as we spend a lot of time analyzing individual stocks and bonds. So that's how we make a difference. We have to really get in there and do our homework. We have to meet the management. In some cases, I know they have to make some changes to property management. There has to be, you know, I asked the question, you know, are you going to, how do you keep a corporate culture that's consistent? And they, you know, they do weekly meetings. They have people on the ground in these facilities. They're not like trying to manage them from one central operation without understanding what they own. So when it comes to real estate, a lot of the decision is based on, you know, demographics and you know, market studies and really understanding what they're buying. I would never buy a stock where I didn't understand what I'm buying. I want to know really well. I want to know every stock in my portfolio. So we're going to tend to focus on those REITs where the managers know something about every REIT that they're, every real estate investment that they've made. So those guys, I rely on people who are experts in the industry. But I've done, I've owned real estate investment trusts for, you know, more than three decades, and you can own them as a bond manager or as an equity manager. You can buy them from the mortgage REIT. And there are some companies, there are some firms that specialize. Cohen and Stairs is one, for example. So there are, I agree, I think there are some managers who are good, and then there are some who aren't. When you start getting into a broad-based index, you got to know that you're going to have some losers as well as winners in there. So by VNQ, for example, you're sort of betting on the whole industry. And I'd say in general the trends are positive in the industry, but I think if you want to add that little bit of alpha, you have to do your homework.
Well, I would agree. The guys on the self stuff, are they, when they get a new, do they, well, actually one of the guys I know has one in, kind of, it's on Route 20, whatever, you just drive by it and you see a self-storage thing and that's his place. And I bet I don't think he's ever had a losing month. And the guy's 80-something. I said, yeah, if I was still 75, I'd build like two more buildings. People are always...
Yeah, no, you've hit it on the head. Yeah. That's exactly what it is. It's near the highway, near the major highway, easy access, not necessarily in the middle, not in a city, not in the top-tier city, so they're not going to be in Chicago or New York, but they're going to be, say, in Rochester, and they're going to be in Springfield. You know, they're going to be in sort of the second-tier cities, where there is less competition. And I was joking with these guys the other day that there's one on every block in Florida. And as you have competition, obviously, you have to charge less. So it's a business that can only make it if you're going to be the main player in that market. And the way they do that is to buy quality properties or to improve them. And actually, they can expand on the space, the actual piece of real estate they own rather than having to buy a second piece of real estate. So they can build that property out for less than it would cost them to buy another facility. But as I mentioned earlier, the other trend that's happening in that space that these guys are doing, and it's been common in the industry, is to look for other basically cheap real estate, commercial real estate. And this is a good opportunity now with a lot of shopping centers closing and industrial spaces closing. And also the whole move towards working from home is going to, you know, empty out a lot of space. So that is going to give opportunity to, say, a self-storage business or some other businesses that are going to be creative in their use of that property, and they're going to be able to buy it at a discount. So I see that trend continuing for the next few years. I don't see any change in that.
In the South Loop here in Chicago, there's got to be three or four buildings that were old, vertical, you know, I'm going to say industrial places that are self-storage now or things like that. I mean, there's probably five of them within, you know, a couple thousand yards of the office here. They're around, and they're full. I mean,
yes, exactly, yeah. And people see opportunity. You know, when it comes to real estate, there's always going to be opportunity. It's, you know, there are going to be downturns in the market, but I think you also have to recognize when there is a downturn, that's going to create opportunity. So, those firms that are going to take advantage, and you were asking the question earlier, how do you know, you know, how do they make those decisions? Well, you have to have the smart people making those decisions who really understand the business, understand the market, you know, the demographics of the market, the markets that they're in, and really have a value added. This firm, again, using sort of not top tier cities, not your largest cities, but sort of your second tier cities, going in areas where there isn't a lot of competition, you know, providing a quality product in those areas, providing maybe a little more climate control. They also do storage of like large trucks and other vehicles, and that's becoming more and more. That's a business.
Oh, the guys with the mobile homes and stuff. Sure, well. Guys with the mobile homes and everything. I mean, it's good.
Exactly,
business.
Mobile homes, RVs. Yeah, exactly. Those are big businesses right now, and I don't see that trend. I see that trend continuing, especially, you know, with baby boomers and people who are getting close to retirement. I mean, I'm in kind of that. That target market, if you will,
yep.
of people doing that, and we have friends who have been doing that as well that have actually bought RVs and are starting to travel and work remotely from their RVs. So that's a trend that I think we're going to see continuing, and they're going to need space to store those vehicles.
Did you ever go rent space at one of these self-storage places?
I literally have one. I'm in the process of moving into a new home in Florida, and I literally have stuff in one right now, so I'm kind of going through the process myself and using that as oftentimes I do it, I guess they call it the mosaic theory, following what's going on around you and sort of seeing how the process works, and then I think you can ask questions more at the operational level, if that makes sense, you know, rather than just looking at the big picture and the numbers. And my analyst has done a couple of reports already, but rather than looking at that, just kind of get down and see, okay, what is the advantage that these guys have over my facility, for example, that I've been renting temporarily. So, but I will say they're full, and there's certainly a lot of demand. For example, having U-Haul trucks very close by, you know, doing a joint venture, say, with a moving company, being in a location that's accessible sort of off the freeway or off the highway. You're able to ask those questions, and that's part of our investment process, is to get down into the, you know, try to make yourself understand it from the consumer's point of view or from an operational point of view. You know, oftentimes we like visiting facilities. You know, we go and visit the facility itself and get a sense of what how it works and how it operates and why it's doing better than the guy down the street.
Well, I always thought that they. If you remember the show Green Acres, remember Mr. Haney?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
The couple times I've had to do this, because I had a person in the building that I basically had to move out, and I couldn't find him, so I moved their stuff. They're all like free first month, right?
Yes.
So by the time you get there, you say, "All right, well, it's $50 a month after that. That's okay." Well, if you get out of there for less than $200 the first day, I know we really like this one lock. We kind of would make everybody use it. Okay, how much the lock? Well, that's like $50. Wait a minute.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, the insurance is on you. We require you to have insurance. Well, don't you have any insurance? Yeah, that's just a facility, not for your stuff. how much is my insurance? Well, that's $30 a month. You're like,
right? Okay, no, you're right. You're exactly right. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
That's exactly what happened. Yeah,
I mean, you would think that if the building's insured, your stuff in it would be, but no, it's not. I mean, it's really bizarre. But
it is. No, it is, and those are exactly issues. In fact, I was talking to them the other day, and that was one of the issues is you know, getting an extra month of storage and then having the insurance cost added, and then asking the questions as I always do, because that's part of what I do is ask questions and then finding out yes, it's just for the facility. I mean, it wasn't that high, but it was. You know, you want to ask questions about all the costs. Again, that's part, you know, it's part of what we do. But I guess the big picture, you know, is just that this is an area that, you know, you can still get a decent dividend yield. It's an area that's coming back. I can see because we trade every day. I can see the movement, just as I could see the movement into preferred. I can see the movement into REITs, and away from sort of, you know, maybe some of the high flying techs. One other name that I had mentioned, that I've seen some nice upward movement in, and I think it has more to go, is a biotech company. It's not necessarily our thing, but Immunogen has a treatment for ovarian cancer.
They're up here
in Boston, and the really top-tier management group that's kind of come in the last few years and turned around this company and sort of brought some financial sense to a really good product, a product in a treatment that's one of a kind. And again, it's looking at the management team. You can have a great story. I know a lot of people, for example, moved into the cannabis industry. You can have a great story, but you really need management with a vision and management that has a financial sense in order to make that story work. So this is Immunogen. It's been up like 7% in the last few, you know, during this period of volatility that we've seen.
They found a treatment.
Ticker symbol IMGN.
It's not. They found a treatment other than the vaccine, right?
There's a treatment for ovarian cancer that is, it's an alternative to doing radiation and chemotherapy for those cancer patients. It's a, you know, they're in like the third stage of the trials for it. You know, the people who are there in place that are turning this company around, are top notch. They needed, I think, some new talent to come in. You know, they have a new CFO who's doing a great job, extremely bright woman, and they have a new, they have a medical director who's been there for a few years. Their CEO is terrific as well. So it's a business that, again, you've got a great story. You're not going to have a lot of competition in the space. You don't really have another product right now, but you just need the right people in place to manage the finances. You know, to manage the, you know, to have the vision.
Well, it's an amazingly tricky industry because, I mean, if you have any kind of an idea, people can try and steal your people. I mean, if you have a patent, they're going to challenge the patent. I mean, and if, you know, you have to have all the money to do these tests, and yet if you let everybody know you're doing them, they try and screw you on it. I mean, it's about as nasty an industry as there is. You got to have people that really know what they're doing.
I absolutely agree, and it's an industry that we generally stay away from. And having grown up in the Boston area, I always joke that when I come back for the holidays at the end of the year, you know, I want to go and see a couple of these companies, and they're always shut. You know, they're always closed for some reason right at the last 2 weeks of December. But it's a tough industry, and especially when you have a single product biotech firm. And again, you have to really get around the background. You have to really understand the background because it really takes a top notch medical professional who has a, you know, a business sense to be able to run a firm like this, because they may have the passion for what they're doing, but you have to combine that with the right financial sense, the right business sense, and so it's generally not a sector that we participate in, but in this case I recognized we had a really good management team, and I think the turnaround story here is good for this company. So,
and what are the chances?
Not be our common thing, but I think in this current world of looking for new opportunities, we want to stay well diversified.
What are the, without getting to talk out of school here, with the one, I'll say one drug company, is it gets better and better and goes further and further along on the tests. You know, it's going to draw interest from all the, you know, the people that have had the patents forever, do nothing but sit there and make money. That's an editorial comment, I guess. I mean, what are the chances that of the Pfizer Merck world saying to these guys, all right, you got something, we'll buy the place out. I mean, what do you think, what are the chances of them taking the thing totally over the goal line by themselves?
as a stock, as a shareholder, I would be, it would be a nice bump up. I would be quite happy. So it is, there is a possibility, absolutely. There is a possibility they could get bought out. But that would be good news for if you own the stock.
Oh, sure.
I mean, in most cases. So yes, absolutely. I see that upside. And I see that upside in firms like Munigen that are well managed, because the Pfizers of the world are going to look for companies that are well managed. They're not just looking for the product or the new treatment. They're looking for a well managed organization. So yeah, a smaller player will do well. I mean, we've done the same thing in the media space as well. The bigger players dominate, but we've got a couple of media companies that are just doing extremely well because they're well managed. So again, that's our value added, is having the right manager. I was joking with somebody over the weekend, you know, as a Patriots fan, and we were talking about how there's a great coach there, despite the fact there's a new quarterback. And the great coach is the leader, the one who's running the show, is the one that's going to make a difference.
Yeah. one of my buddies used to work for me. We played basketball for DePaul, and he went to one of these. This is way back when. I mean, the guy would be 70. He's dead now, but. He said they went to one of these camps back before they even had camps. And so they had some coach came out there. He's got X's and O's going all over the place, right? So they get some guy from Arkansas coach. He walks out and he goes, "Boys, let me tell you, all that bull crap is fine, but it really comes down to who are the X's and who are the O's."
Yeah. That's true, too. That's absolutely true.
You're right. I'd love to see, you know, those kinds of things. You know, you walk in and your stock's 20 and one day it's 80. Well, hell, that's good news for you and everybody you put money into. At some point, I'd like to see some company be able to make it through the system on their own.
Yes.
Instead of always having...
Yeah, and I think that, again, I think that's when it really comes down. It comes down to management, and it comes down to, you know, choosing the right people. In many cases, it's people who've done well in other organizations that have already proven themselves. Part of the reason I have trouble with tech, and although I really believe, again, in the product, is I think some of the younger management teams who aren't experienced, you know, maybe aren't used to dealing with different environments. So when we're looking, you know, especially in the high-yield space, we're looking at a management team that's kind of weathered the downturn of the cycle in their particular industry. So I always go back to AK Steel, which is just a very well-run company in an industry that's had, you know, has gone through its cycles. And they did well, you know, as a company that falls into the high-yield space, double B-rated company, they did very well. And they actually have managed, they have been very good bondholders. In fact, they bought back the bonds right before we went into COVID. It's almost like they knew this was coming. And we actually were able to sell the bonds we owned at a premium prior to, you know, the early part, I think it was January of this year. So those companies that have a consistent record of doing well in downturns, and, you know, when things aren't looking well for them, those are the ones that are going to make it.
I would agree.
The survivors.
Dan, thank you very much, bud. Talk at you next week. Some good stuff.
Yep.
Storage facility,
great.
That's a good idea. I never thought of that, but you're right. Those guys got to be doing great. SP Futures not on 50. That's not good. NASDAQ Futures down 257. It's 2.2%. But more of the whole story right after the break.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Matt Weber. S&P futures are down 52. Yeah, 52. NASDAQ futures down 262. Yeah. Dow futures down 270. So we're looking real ugly here this morning. This is after we sold off after the Fed announcement yesterday. Over in Europe, we got the DAX down 88. That's 0.7%. FTSE down 21.4%. CAC around down 42.8%. So CAC around down the most there. Nikkei down 156.7%. Shanghai down 13.4%. Hang Seng, this is not a bunch, down 384. That's 1.6%. I wonder if it had anything to do with the U.S. envoy visiting over there. We'll see. Now the U.S. 10-year yield's down to 0.65. Again, the yin and the yang here between the market telling you one thing about the economy and the bonds telling you another. It's been going on for quite a while, but it's getting worse, if anything. Bund down minus 0.50. Japan above zero by just a hair, 0.008. Oil, actually, it's down now. It was up earlier. It's under 40, 39.94. It was over 40 last time we talked. Brent down 14 cents, 42.08. Natural gas down 5 cents, 221. RBOB at 118. Gold getting smacked here today a little bit. Down 19 to 19.50, kind of the middle of the range it's been on for a while. Silver down 42 cents, 27.05. Copper down a penny to 304. Maybe we have for us Trevi Weather Sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. The outbound Kennedy is still the major issue this morning. Between Kimball and Addison on the outbound side, there's closed lanes due to an earlier crash that happened about an hour ago. And crews are still working to get that fully cleared up. It says the Kennedy pretty jammed up in both directions, but especially on that outbound side if you're heading out toward O'Hare. Significant delays due to an earlier crash between Kimball and Addison. So keep that in mind. Inbound side, no accident to report, but slow traffic due to gapers on the looking at the outbound side. Edens looks okay. Eisenhower, heavy traffic is starting to build heading into downtown, but no accidents or issues to report. Stevenson and the Southside expressways have been quiet all morning, so good news down there. Off the expressways, no issues to report anywhere, so that's good news too. Weather today, you might notice it's much cooler today, but still pleasant. A high of 66 with partly cloudy skies. Right now it's overcast and 64 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 108 today. Right now it's mostly clear and 80. In sports, Cubs keep winning. Last night it was a walk-off RBI single for Javier Baez in the 10th with two outs and two strikes as they topped the Indians 3-2. Cubs now with a 5.5 game lead over the Cardinals and the Reds, who are tied for second place. The White Sox are red hot, but they lost last night to the Twins 5-1. They'll look to try to win the rubber match tonight against Minnesota. Sox are a couple games up on the Twins in the AL Central, still have the best record in the American League, second best record in all of baseball. Diamondbacks beat the Angels 9-6. Thursday night football, week 2 NFL tonight, kicks off between the Cincinnati Bengals and the Cleveland Browns. That's a 7:20 Central Time kickoff. Big Ten football announced that they are beginning the weekend of October 24th, and they'll play an 8-game, 8-week season that will complete with the Big Ten Championship game on December 19th. And that should qualify them for the college football playoff. College basketball, the NCAA announced that November 25th is when they'll tip off their season. And the U.S. Open is underway today. And we'll have scores and more tomorrow. Looking forward to a weekend of golf as well. Chief.
Man, do you think it's going to be just the guys with the TV contracts that come back, or do you think leagues like the MAC and those guys start up?
That's a very good question. A lot of the smaller leagues have been playing, first of all. Not all of them, but a lot of them have been, but some of them haven't. Lou mentioned the Mountain West. You mentioned the MAC. I don't know. The incentive definitely wouldn't be as high, you wouldn't think, for them to return without all the TV revenue and everything else that goes with it. But maybe they will play. I haven't heard much about the smaller conferences.
What is the, in professional football, what is the scoop on fans? Was it city by city, or is there a blanket rule, or what?
It's essentially state by state. And so, like, the Florida teams have been allowing fans. The Texas teams have allowed fans. Missouri, you know, the Kansas City Chiefs, they allowed fans. And I think that, Charlotte, North Carolina, they allowed some fans for the Carolina Panthers. I assume, like, Georgia might. But, yeah, it's basically the red states are allowing fans and the blue states are not.
So if you...
And by allowing fans, they're allowing, like, 15,000.
Right, so if you have a... season tickets, that's 8 games. What, they're giving you 2? Everybody gets 2?
That I don't know how they're working that out. That's a good question.
That would sort of make sense.
That would make sense. Or, you know, what is your season ticket base like for the Bears? Is it...
It's got to be.
Is it all of them?
Yeah, I bet it is.
Okay, just wondering.
Well, I mean,
it's not like baseball where
I don't
where like a smaller market baseball team might only have a 10 or 15,000
No, I'm going to say
base.
That... If there's anything that the Bears aren't season tickets, it's got to be onesies and twosies. So.
Right. Yeah, I would think you're right.
That's something that's considered. What's the word then? What's the fancy marketing word? Is it a virtual sellout or is a?
Yeah, they say virtual sellout. Yeah, if there's only onesie twosies available, they call it a virtual sellout. By the way, I also heard that a lot of season ticket holders at these places have opted out, and so. The teams have given them the option, you know, do you want to keep your season tickets this year and go, come to the games, or do you want to opt out and then we'll use your money for next year? And a lot of them have opted out and said, I'm not going to go to games this year for, you know, obvious reasons.
Yep.
And so that's probably taking care of some of that, too.
Here's a quote from one of your heroes. Who is it? If you're not in the parade, you watch the parade. That's life.
I don't know who said that, but, yeah, I guess that is life.
Doc Coach.
Oh, yeah, that guy, who in some ways I like, and I've met him a couple times, and in some ways I think he's a complete imbecile. But
oh, yeah, he's an enigmatic man, should we put it that way. How's that for a term?
It sounds good.
Reminds me a little bit of what they used to say on the trading floor. I don't know if you heard this before, probably from me. There's three kinds of people in the world. Can you name them?
Well, it depends on the context, because I could. There's a lot of kinds of people in the world.
Some people make things happen. Some people watch things happen. Most people wonder what happened. That's
what I've always found talking about the people that make things happen versus the people that watch things happen is that the people that actually do the work or take the time to make something happen are always the ones that get the most shit from the people that don't do anything.
It. Absolutely.
Have you ever noticed that?
Oh, without, I mean, if you do anything, you leave yourself open for...
Right. And it's always the people that don't do anything that are the loudest and complain the most and you know, bitch about everything, and they're the ones that didn't do anything.
Well, the guy who's never once played any sport and sitting there in a wife beater and a beer, he's going to be the one who's going to tell you the quarterback sucks the worst.
Right. Of course.
Without any knowledge of how hard it could possibly be to play. I mean, I don't know, I probably said this before, when I was in the OEX, but there, of course, everybody on the floor was, you know, fanatic sports people, pretty much. And for some reason, you know, different nationalities just love basketball. And one guy was one day just going off and off about how this guy in the Bulls like really sucks. And I go, hey, you know, would you let it go? I said, as I play ball 3 leagues a week and have played 5 days a week my entire winter life, the best guy I've ever played against is not near as good as the worst guy who's ever played in the NBA. I mean,
right.
You guys have no idea how good these people are. Even if they aren't, they look crummy next to Jordan. I mean, but they're so good it's scary. I mean what golfer, any golfer that's ever played competitively, you've got no business trying to play. I mean, it's all, first of all, they obey the rules. No, nobody else does when they golf. So that's
right.
That's five shots right there.
Yeah, they don't fluff anything. Yeah. They don't ground the club, et cetera.
They don't, there's five
no
to gimmies. Ten right there. There's no gimme.
There's no breakfast
there's
ball.
No, there's no pulling it away from the tree a little bit. I mean, certainly no mulligans. One of my buddies who kind of knew some of these guys, because one of his best friends was the number one guy out of the golf school the same year Tom Watson came out. This guy was like 5 years old when he goes on the tour, and his wife's all pissed off because she's only can imagine what he's doing on a tour, right? And so he was only on there a couple of years, but he goes, these guys are so good. Is if you can't go out and shoot 5 under on your home course in the worst hangover of your life, you got no business on the tour.
Yeah.
He's Lanny Watkins at his home course was like a -3, and he'd spot you 4 shots.
By the way, they are underway at the U.S. Open. And it's at Wingfoot this year in New York.
Is nobody there, or are they anybody?
I don't think anyone's there. Some of the early groups are 7 holes in already at 7:45 a.m. Central Time. So they teed off very early, obviously, and it's East Coast. But Rory is on top early, 1 under through 2 holes for him.
I had a client who was a late bloomer in golf, and he just became – the word addiction comes to mind, man. I mean,
it can easily happen. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm addicted to golf, but if money was no object and if I didn't have to work all day, I could easily play 3 or 4 times a week. I love the game.
I used to play when I was at Notre Dame. I mean, you only had 4 weeks of good weather, right? But it was right there, you know. So my idea of golf is you know, it's 3 hours and 15 minutes walking. Of course, I couldn't do that anymore. But
that's the best version of golf. The problem is the courses are so crowded now, or maybe they were then too. But man, they're seemingly just so crowded. No matter where you play, unless you can get out on kind of a crummy weather day, you're going to be waiting on almost every hole, and it's just it's brutal. It's absolutely brutal.
I mean, there was a couple of times that we walked the course in under 3 hours.
You can do it if you're going up and hitting the ball. I mean, if you don't have to wait on every tee box, you can easily do that.
But I mean, I love that. But
me too.
But the hour and a half drive to get to a place and the 5 hour round, you're like, God, it's not worth a whole day.
I mean, it's not, and it does become a whole day. I think what'd you say? When you were kind of at your best, your handicap was around 18. Is that right?
17,
which is pretty darn good.
I cheated a little bit
because I've been grinding pretty hard this year, and I've got my handicap to about 21, and playing straight, and I think I can get into the teens, but I'm not quite there yet.
I was a lot of it has to do with the course, Manny. I mean, when I got my handicap, I use this term, I was playing the system. All right, when I say that, we used to leave. When they rebuilt the Dan Ryan Expressway, the bridge here, it was a long time ago. But for those couple of years, we could get out of the OEX pit at 3:15, race to the car, and tee off in Winnetka at 4, because nobody could get through to the Kennedy. So you got in the Kennedy with 75 miles an hour all the way up there, right? And the next year we couldn't play anymore because it was crowded. It took an hour to get there. So we were literally strapping on the spikes. But the course up there, I think it's a Winnetka Golf, whatever. It's a gorgeous course, and if you play the white tees, it's pretty darn forgiving. You play the blues, even though I was a pretty big hitter back then, all of a sudden I couldn't carry the fairway traps where I could, you know. That's why when you see these pros, traps that you and I are looking at, they don't even look at them. they're over the top of those things. Like the trees we're going to hit, they don't hit. They're not hitting them. They're over them, right?
Right.
The difference in the course rating between the blue tees and the whites was like 2. It really was like an 8-shot difference. So I always played the blues. So I was shooting like 92, 91 all the time, which is about a 17. But if I would have played somebody from the whites, I'd have been screwing them. Because,
right.
I mean, because I was, you know, I was always mid-80s to lower from the whites.
Yeah. Well, in some courses, there's not a huge difference between the blues and whites. Some courses, it is a huge difference.
Yeah.
I mean, where every par 3 is 200 yards.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
And that's a big deal.
That's a huge deal. And like I say, and there seems to be no rhyme or reason in the difference in the course rating between the two.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's kind of strange. But the difference between, I mean, you'll sit there, and I mean, this is what happens to golfers, probably traders too. You'd sit there and you couldn't drive to save your life. And you, but you all of a sudden you clunk a few putts, and now you shoot an 85. The next day you're driving fine, you fluff a few chips and you shoot an 85.
Yeah.
And finally you just get to the point where it's not just if I could have driven today I would have shot a 75. No, it doesn't work that way. I mean you're just an 85 guy, and if you want to get better, you have to play 2-3 days a week. But here's the key thing: you have to say, okay, this week, the biggest crummy part of my game is my wedge play. You've got to go out there for an hour and work on your wedge play. And then the next week, if it's your mid-iron play, if you do that, you'll find out that next month you might be 84 average.
Right.
Next month, 83. But it's serious work once you get under 90 to go even one more shot on average. And the idea of these guys are averaging like 70. I mean, Arnie Palmer or something, I don't know, he was like in his 40s or something. He had never shot worse than 82 or 83 on a course ever. You know, I mean,
that's crazy.
It's not even the same sport that you and I are hacking around at. Let's
no,
just put
it's
it that
not. Way. It's definitely not. And their ability to scramble when they need to get out of trouble.
Yeah.
When you do hit a bad drive and, you know, you're in the trees or you're in a fairway bunker, where we very easily turn that into a 6 or a 7, that doesn't even cross their mind. It's how do I get up there? How do I get up and down? How do I save par?
Well,
and they're able to do it.
I bought one of those lob wedges, right? And everybody thinks that, I think a 1-iron is easier than a lob wedge to hit, because you got to swing so hard in the darn thing, and it goes nowhere, right? But if you happen to hit it, catch it fat, I think I took out a windshield the first time I tried it. I mean, all of a sudden, if you hit the thing thin, you're going to send that thing 150 yards right at somebody's head. Anyway, reason why I'm going so far into this, man, is it's sort of like trying to trade the market. I mean, there's people that know what they're doing, and it's stunning to me, you know, being in the money management business, how many people have like zero respect for the market and all its foibles, shall we say, and its history, and their ability to think that they can do this all themselves. Especially when you lob into, you know, options or futures trading or minis and hedging this and that and the other thing. It's you talk about the difference in the how the world sort of has changed. When we first started the firm here, 1991 or 90, whatever the hell it was, there were seminars all over the place, and people would spend like a whole week going to a seminar and learning how to trade options or futures or whatever, commodities, you know, commodity seminar. And people would go and they would study, and these guys would like give them homework, and you know, maybe have a couple of drinks one night, but it was like going to school for a week. And they would do that for technical analysis. Guys would go sometimes for like Fibonacci, it'd be like 2 weeks. I mean, people were seriously into learning. They had respect for any business. Hey, I don't just fall off a turnip truck and become an option trader or a technical guy or a futures trader. I mean, to trade corn, it's like a lifetime. It's like kung fu. Corn, wheat, soybeans, they're all different. Each one of them is like a lifetime to learn. Now, you don't see anybody wanting to do any of that stuff. Everybody's got it all figured out. From Schwab or somebody or other, they'll get the technical analysis from this guy, or they'll do this, or they got a machine where...
Yeah, but you also have to put yourself in their shoes, because if you're, let's say, 35, which I'm older than that now, by a couple years, but, you know, it's a nice round number. The market has gone straight up for 12 years.
Right.
So you, in your mind, you're like, all I need to do is just buy, you know, the 5 big stocks and just sit on my ass all day and they go up every day.
Right.
And, you know, we know that that isn't going to last forever, but we didn't think it was going to last 12 years either.
Well, right, but there's been decades. 97 to 2007, the market was unchanged.
Crazy.
You know, 68 to 78, it was down by 20%. You know, so it's, there needs to be enough history. You know, even though the last 5 days have been sunny, we know that if we schedule golf next week, there's a possibility of rain, right?
Right.
You don't just take the last 5 days and say that's our recent history. But, I mean, right now, I have never seen a market this difficult to trade. The amount of what I consider to be tradable information that I don't get, there was always guys at front ran stuff. I mean, there was always sleaze bags in this world. There's always had been. But when you're on the trading floor and you had the news feed and you had the stock moving from the specialist, and there was one spot where the stock traded, at least if something happened, if there was a sleaze bag, you could see it, you know, in front of you. All of a sudden, out of the blue, somebody takes a stock up a half a buck, and you go, all right, where's the announcement? I mean, you still weren't exactly in the loop, right? I mean, at all, but you could see the thing coming. There were a few guys on the trading floor, and they actually rotated around, where the guys would go through certain firms. They used to call it fast money, where they'd use Hutton for a while, and then all of a sudden, the Hutton guys would get pissed off at them and wouldn't want to do the business anymore, then they'd go to Goldman for a while, then they'd go to Morgan Stanley for a while. But it was always kind of the same people that were kind of front running. And the firms would get tired of them too, because they would demand that the firm would take part of the trade. Well, the firm doesn't care if they run out and get paid a commission for screwing me, but when they end up getting screwed too for half of it, then all of a sudden it's a different game.
Yeah, there's
right?
hell to pay at that
yeah, there's hell to pay at that point. So these guys would move around, but it got to the point where you sort of knew which the firm was that had the fast money that month, for lack of a better term. There was much more information in the system. I mean, to cause even a guy like Milton Friedman, Nobel Prize winner, to say they shouldn't worry about insider trading. Because in an open outcry world, when everybody was in the same room and you see the whites of everybody's eyes, if somebody right before IBM's earnings, 3 months in a row, raced out and did calls or puts and he was absolutely right, the second time you probably wouldn't trade with him, or you'd move the price. Third time, you might drop them, you know, type of thing.
Yeah.
But now in this world, I don't know how, what the motivation for people is to even police anything like that, especially if it's coming out of government. There's probably no policing. I mean, what are the chances of, you know, just for instance, what are the chances of Barr coming down on Trump's son-in-law? I'm not accusing the guy of anything, but if he did, what are the chances? I mean, I'm saying none, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what are the chances of Kim Fox going after Lori or Tony Preckwinkle? I mean, none, right? I mean, because they're definitely
not Preckwinkle.
No, I mean, she's the one who put her there. So I mean, so the more that stuff goes on, and the more I say under the blanket this all gets, the worse it gets. But now, a professional, a guy like me, now we look at this. Okay, now what are the disadvantages to this? And how could I possibly make out for my clients? Well, one thing is we've taken our protected index program, and it's not as protected. It doesn't perform like it did before, because we made money before by always being ahead on the theta curve. You know what that means, Manny? It means time decay was coming our way, that if nothing happened during the day, the position picked up $100 in theoretical time decay. That's
okay.
That's called theta. It's like the, I don't know what slope of the curve that is, but now you don't necessarily want those calls out there, because when the market runs up, you don't want them in the way. You want to be able to, when the market runs up, you want to be a seller when it runs up, not before. Okay, so now what's the flip side of that? Well, the flip side of that is you're wearing these puts. Because and which with time decay going against you, and someday somewhere, everything's just going to calm down for 2 weeks, and you're basically going to suck hind end on these puts, right? But in the meantime, it makes you a very aggressive trader, because when it runs up, you can be a seller, and if it runs down, you roll your puts down and essentially become a buyer. So if you know what you're doing and been seeing this movie somewhat before, not anything like this with this movement every day like this, because obviously it's some combination of internal information and bad markets. But you can set yourself up in advance to sort of take advantage of it, as long as it stays like this. Like I said, all of a sudden one day, but hopefully not too soon, because I got everybody set up like this, it's going to come to the point where you don't want to have this stuff. It's just going to sit there for 3 weeks. But I don't see that happening anytime soon, do you?
I don't think so.
I mean, someday it will. I mean, I don't know, maybe, you know, do you think, we don't have 30 seconds, do you think that if Biden wins, they're going to say there's two vaccines out there, go get it, and we're declaring a COVID beat and we're going back to normal? I mean, somebody's got to say that one day. I don't know. Does he have the stones to do it?
It's a great question, and I don't know. I really don't. I don't know what world we're living in, to be honest.
No, it's pretty hard to recognize, isn't it?
It really is.
S&P futures now down 56. It's the lows I've seen them. NASDAQ futures down 271. Hopefully we get a little bit of a bounce back here today. But anyway, we'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks, tell you all about it.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.